Chapter 1. Everything was quiet in the gloom. My Pro-X headphones allowed me to hear everything from the occasional drip of water from the rock ceiling to the snort and grunt of a cave troll, and I could feel my heart start to pound with anticipation. Amrila and I had tracked this ugly fucker for a couple of hours, and we were now posted up outside of his loot-filled cave. The horned woman and I were well hidden behind a rock outcropping surrounded by low bushes and a few of the twisted trees that grew throughout the Yeni territory. I could see the mouth of the troll's cave through the leaves and gnarled branches around us, and I estimated the entrance was about 50 yards away. Amrila and I had gotten the tip on this cave troll from Scourge, one of the half-demon woman's contacts in the criminal underworld of this subterranean world. According to Scourge, this troll had been waylaying travelers, bandits, and small caravans, and then dragging the spoils back to his cave. Killing the fuggly beast would not only save lives, but there would also be a nice payoff at the end, too. And I fucking loved loot. I looked down about 10 yards away to the spot where Amrila and I had partially buried and hidden a bear trap with some leaves and other debris, just to double-check it wasn't visible, but it was camouflaged pretty well. "Do you think we should order dinner when we get home?" I asked the red-skinned woman in barely more than a whisper. "Give Ibsith a night off from cooking?"
"Sounds good,"
the Zinkari woman said with a shrug as she watched the road that led up to the cave on the right.
"But not burgers, maybe some of that sweet and spicy chicken, what's it called?"
"General Tso's?" I replied as I went back to watching the left side of the road.
"Yes!"
Amrila agreed in an enthusiastic whisper.
"General Tso's, I hope one day I too shall be so great of a warrior that something delicious is named after me."
"You're getting there," I snorted. Despite the calm and light-hearted conversation, I could feel my adrenaline rising, like it always did just before a fight. The cave troll had wandered off about half an hour ago after a large, rodent-like animal Amrila called a melis. But the thing looked like a mix between a huge rabbit and a capybara to me, with dark, reddish fur. Nothing about the animal screamed edible to me, but the troll seemed excited, and it had given the black-eyed woman and I a chance to set up the bear trap. Then, the sound of heavy footsteps drew me from my thoughts, and I tensed and strained to see in my crouched position. My heart rate picked up a little more, and I saw the huge troll coming up the left-hand path. It wasn't as big as the jewel-skin troll I'd fought when Amrila and I'd first met, but he was still a formidable opponent. The troll's skin was a mottled gray and brown, and his lumpy body was muscular, with long arms that reached past his knees and a prominent brow bone. The beast's stringy gray hair hung in greasy tendrils around his small eyes, and his head seemed a little too small for his body. "Ready, partner?" I hissed at the horned woman. Amrila nodded slightly with a broad, fierce grin that showed off her sharp canine teeth. And then she slipped out of the bushes we were hiding in with barely a rustle of the leaves. I raised up my galil and used the outcropping to steady my aim and keep my red dot in position. Then the troll came up the left side of the path that led to his cave, and Amrila circled around the right side and positioned herself so the bear trap was between her and the monster. As the big, gray-brown fucker came into my view, I could see the melis slung over his shoulder. The big rodent's head was bashed in and bleeding down the chest of the troll, and a bloody wooden club dangled from the big dude's other hand. I definitely did not want to get close enough for the bastard to use that thing. I watched as the Zinkari woman got into position, and then I took a deep breath as I waited for the right moment. I wanted to make sure the troll was caught in the bear trap, since he had a thick-ass hide, and it would take a few shots to bring him down. As the cave troll stomped closer and closer, I could feel my pulse quicken in the side of my neck, and my breathing became shallow. Then the troll started to turn to take his lunch into his cave, and he was about 10 yards from my hiding place.
"Hey, big boy!"
Amrila shouted as she jumped from her hiding place while brandishing her two swords. The Zinkari woman made sure to stay on the opposite side of the hidden bear trap from the monster, which also meant she wouldn't be in the way of my shot once the troll took the bait. Sure enough, the big fucker locked his tiny, beetle-black eyes on the horned woman, dropped the melis, and snarled.
"Pretty demon wanna play?"
The troll rumbled and then started toward Amrila. I felt a small shock at hearing the troll speak, since the only other troll I'd ever encountered had been a slobbering beast. but the red-skinned woman had warned me this troll would be smarter. Relatively smarter, at least. But I kept my Galil trained on the sweet spot, just above the bear trap, and I kept my cool as I watched the troll begin to run toward my Zenkari wife. When the brute was about 20 feet from Amrila, she swung her swords in menacing arcs, as if preparing to fight the big fucker. Snap! The bear trap clamped around the troll's left leg, and he screamed in agony and rage. The red-skinned woman danced out of the way, and I placed the Galil's red dot on the troll as he slammed his bloody club on the ground. Each hit of the club caused the ground to quake. I squeezed the trigger 3 times, and my Pro-Xs came on to block the loud report of the rifle as 3 ragged, red holes appeared in the troll's side, seemingly at the same time. The fuggly wretch dropped his club as he struggled between trying to free his ruined leg, covering the bleeding wounds in his side, or covering his ears from the deafening blast of my rifle. The troll roared again as his confusion compounded his rage. But I didn't let up. I fired again and again, and my headphones silenced the world around me for a brief moment with each squeeze of my trigger. The beast tried to turn his body and search the line of trees and underbrush where I was hiding, but I paused and waited for the right moment as I trained my red dot on his head. The moment his eyes lined up with my shot, I rapidly fired 3 rounds to be sure I inflicted as much damage as possible in that vulnerable place. The troll's head snapped back, and then the brute fell backward and hit the ground like a felled tree. Then Amrila rushed forward, slit the monster's throat with one of her swords, and jumped back in case there was a hint of life left in the troll. A moment of tense silence passed, but then the Zenkari woman looked to where I was hiding and gave me a thumbs up. I couldn't help but smile. My half-demon wife and I made a good team, and we were getting better every day. I flipped my rifle's safety on before I slung it back over my shoulder, and then I stepped out of the bushes to join Amrila on the path outside of the cave. "Good work, partner," I grinned as I put my hand on her slim waist and kissed her deeply. The red-skinned woman kissed me back and bit my bottom lip ever so slightly so I could feel her canines, which gave me a little thrill to my core.
"Shall we ransack the cave now?"
Amrila purred with a greedy little glint in her black eyes. "After you," I chuckled, and I followed the Zenkari woman into the cave mouth. This cave smelled almost as bad as the jewel skin troll's home had, but it was slightly less disgusting. There weren't rotting, half-eaten bodies like the other troll had in his cave, but there were piles of rotting food, which gave the place an undeniable funk. But around the walls of the cave, there were also stacks of broken crates and haphazardly piled sacks and bags. "Which ones do you want to search?" I asked the horned woman. "Crates or bags?" Amrila murmured as she moved her head from side to side.
"Crates."
"All right." I sighed as I moved to start looking through the various sacks piled to one side. The first few were just filled with clothes and personal belongings, but nothing of value. The next one I picked up jingled, though, and turned out to be filled with silver and copper coins, so I put that one to the side to take with us.
"Rotten fruit,"
Amrila said from behind me, followed by the thud of a crate as it was tossed to one side.
"More rotten fruit. Ugh, rotten meat. Oh."
I turned to see what the Zenkari woman had found, and saw her pull a small, beautifully made glass bottle from some musty straw in one of the crates. "What's that?" I asked with a raised eyebrow.
"Perfume,"
Amrila smirked.
"Nice stuff, too. We should take some of these. And it looks like some wine bottles in the next crate. We might be able to sell them to Grok."
"Perfect," I grinned. Then I found a small lockbox of gold coins and some jewelry. And along with my stash at home, I knew I'd be able to sell them for a good chunk to Owen McElfresh soon. I needed to go up to Cleveland to see him soon anyway, since he'd gotten a hold of some fake identities for Ibsith and Amrila for me. The last 2 weeks since I'd fought and killed the Shadow Demon had gone by in a flash, and it felt like so much and yet nothing had happened since then. I'd started teaching Ibsith to drive, though, so she wouldn't be stuck at home when Amrila and I were down here in the gloom. My elven wife always seemed content and hardly ever complained, but that didn't mean she was immune to boredom. Once I got up to Cleveland to get the paperwork for the ladies, Ibsith would have a proper driver's license, or at least a proper-looking driver's license, so I figured she should know how to drive. I dug a little deeper into the pile of cloth bags and burlap sacks until I felt like I'd found everything of value. Then I emptied out a couple of cloth bags that just had clothes in them and shoved my gold and jewelry in them. "What all did you find?" I asked Amrila, and I turned to help her with the crates.
"The wine and perfume,"
the red-skinned woman replied as she looked over the crates she felt were worth setting aside.
"I also found some scented oils and cakes of soap. The Troll must have come across some soap makers travelling to the Yeni capital. Too bad he never used any of them."
"Yeah," I snorted. "There's a pretty powerful smell in here. I got two big sacks of gold and whatnot. We can each put a sack in our backpacks, and I'll help you with the crates. How far away is that dead drop?"
"It's about an hour's walk to the south,"
the horned woman said as she wrinkled her nose, and she was doubtless thinking about the amount of manual labor she was about to do.
"Scourge wanted to use one far away enough that no one would stumble on it if they heard the troll was dead and came looking for spoils."
"All right," I said in a bright tone. "We'd best get going then." Amrila took one of the heavy bags of gold and put it in her backpack, while I did the same and divided up the crates of luxury goods. But I made my pile heavier than my Zenkari wife's pile, since I was almost twice her size. The horned woman was more agile than strong, but I loved her just as she was. Once we had our respective loads, the beautiful horned woman and I carried our crates out of the cave. But we looked around as we exited to make sure my rifle fire hadn't drawn any unwanted attention. Thankfully, the coast was clear, so we headed out to the south, to the dead drop Scourge had set up. Amrila and I had cut a deal with Scourge that he would sell any of the goods we found in the cave and take a small cut of the profits. I was still kind of fuzzy on the worth of gold in the gloom, but Amrila seemed to have an encyclopedic knowledge of the value of anything and everything in the underground world, and I knew I could trust her to make sure Scourge didn't cheat us. My red-skinned wife also seemed to trust the strange, dark-gray-skinned Zenkari man who set off my gaydar. I wasn't the jealous type, but I did find myself wondering about how they knew each other every now and then. There wasn't really any chemistry between my wife and the enigmatic Scourge, so I didn't worry about it. Besides, Amrila made how she felt about me clear every day, and insecurity didn't really serve any purpose. "How's learning to read coming?" I asked as we walked with our arms full of loot.
"I already know how to read,"
the horned woman shot back with a saucy smile.
"Just not the writing of the surface."
I didn't have the heart to tell her just how many languages were actually spoken on the surface world, and let her continue.
"You would think 26 characters would be more manageable,"
Amrila sighed.
"But Ibsith and I are making progress, Ibsith more so than me."
"What's tripping you up?" I asked in a helpful tone. "Anything I can help with?"
"Learning to read was boring the first time I did it as a child,"
the red-skinned woman snorted.
"It has not grown any more interesting since."
"Yeah," I replied as I stepped over an exposed tree root. "But I bet when you were a child, you didn't have access to bodice rippers."
"To what?"
Amrila laughed at the ludicrous term.
"Bodice rippers? Is that a threat or a promise?"
"It's what my mom used to call steamy romance novels when I was a kid," I chuckled. "Next to the grocery checkout, they used to have whole racks of them, all with beautiful women in torn dresses, standing next to beefy guys with no shirts on. It's my understanding that some of them get pretty dirty."
How dirty?"
the red-skinned woman asked with a sultry, sidelong look at me. "How dirty do you want it?" I asked with a slight growl in my voice. "These are the days of the internet. If it helps you to learn, I'll find you the dirtiest smut that's ever been written."
"That does seem slightly less boring,"
the Zenkari woman agreed with a mischievous grin.
"Although, I'd rather just do the smut with you in our bed."
"I'm down for that," I chuckled. Amrila and I found the short passageway of tunnels that led to the dead drop where we placed the oils, wines, and some of the perfumes in a hidden chest for Scourge to pick up later. But I kept the gold for myself. Then we headed out to the main Yeni cavern, just north of the Great Forest. The sheer size of the subterranean world that existed beneath my backyard never ceased to amaze me. But as we carefully picked our way through the expanse of the massive, underground forest, we intentionally avoided any trails or well-traveled paths. In the Yeni lands, I was still a wanted man. Ursinger, the insane chief of the Yeni Night Elves, was still pissed that I'd rescued his sister from some of his goons almost 2 months ago. But Ibsith was happy now, and I was working on a plan to bring that rat bastard fuck Ursinger down once and for all. Amrila and I made it safely back to the Northern Iron Door, and back to the safety of the surface tunnels. And just before the area where I'd placed some floodlights on a motion sensor, Emrila paused and put on her large, rhinestone sunglasses to help get her through the bright lights. Any creatures from the gloom couldn't take bright lights, and that's exactly why I'd put them up. Emrila had started to get used to sunlight after weeks of exposure, but she still kept her fancy sunglasses on her at all times. As we came into range of the motion sensors, the lights came on with an audible clicking sound. And I even had trouble with the brightness of the light.
Motherfucker!
The horned woman exclaimed, and she used my body to shield her face from the worst of the light.
Every time I think I'm going to get used to it...
Just hold on to me and keep your eyes closed, I said as I took the red-skinned woman's hand to lead her through the patch of the floodlights. We'll be past it in a minute. I was pleased with how well the lights had been working. If anything did happen to find the well-hidden iron door to the surface and then navigate the tunnels toward my backyard, these lights would be enough to slow them down, if not stop them entirely. The gloom was mostly lit by patches of blue, glowing mushrooms, and even though there was fire in the gloom, these lights were way fucking brighter than a campfire. We got past the floodlights, and Emrila and I kept going up and toward home. Once we were almost to the metal hatch that led to my backyard, my phone found a signal again, and I got an alert. I recognized the sound of the security alert, and when I checked it as we walked through the last of the tunnels, I saw a video of me comically leading my Zinkari wife through the bright lights. Check it out, I snorted as I held up my phone for Emrila to see a replay of the video.
Ugh, I look so silly.
The red-skinned beauty rolled her eyes in mock annoyance, but I could see the smile that played at the corners of her pouty mouth. I chuckled to myself and put away my phone. The horned woman and I had reached the ladder that led up and out, and we were almost home. A few moments later, Emrila and I came up into the backyard. It was early afternoon at the tail end of summer in Ohio, which was magical in itself. The weather had just started to cool off, but it wasn't going to be cold for weeks yet. And soon the leaves would start to turn, and it would be turkey and deer hunting season. Ibsith came out of the back door to greet us, and she wore a big smile on her face at seeing her family return home. My elven wife had on a lacy, white sundress with a halter neckline tied around the back of her graceful throat. The blue-skinned woman's ample breasts could barely be contained by the little dress, and they bounced softly as she ran to throw her slender arms around my neck. Then Ibsith pulled my face to hers as she kissed me hello.
That didn't take long.
She giggled as her violet eyes looked adoringly at me. It was just a cave troll. I shrugged and then chuckled.
You are both so brave, husband.
Ibsith breathed.
I would not want to face a troll of any kind. My governess used to tell me stories about how trolls were attracted to the scent of naughty children to get me to behave. What could you possibly have done to be called naughty?
Emrila asked with a throaty laugh.
I have been known to be mischievous.
Ibsith smiled teasingly and let go of me only to attack the strawberry blonde Zinkari woman with a hug. Emrila smiled tolerantly and let the white-haired woman embrace her, but when Ibsith let go, Emrila reached into the bodice of her leather armor and pulled out a small glass bottle, which she presented to the elf.
You brought me a gift?
Ibsith gasped, and her eyes went wide as she took the delicate bottle from her friend and looked it over.
It's not much.
Emrila shrugged nonchalantly.
I just thought you might like it.
My wife carefully worked out the little stopper of the bottle and pressed it against the inside of her wrist. Then the blue-skinned woman brought her hand up to her face and smelled the scent.
Oh, it's lovely,
the elven woman said in a pleased tone. Ibsith held up her wrist for me to smell, and it was quite nice. The scent was light and warm, with just a hint of spice. I like it, I mused before I glanced at Emrila. Good eye, or nose.
Thank you,
the violet-eyed woman said sweetly, and she took my hand and then Amrila's.
Let's go inside and you both can tell me about your adventure.
Ibsith had lunch ready for us, so we ate and regaled the night elf with the story of how he tracked and trapped the cave troll. Afterwards, I decided to wash up, and I put the gold we'd brought home with the rest of my small treasure hoard in the safe in the master bedroom closet. I used to call it my room, but that term was kind of relative when you have two wives. Sometimes I slept with Ibsith in the master bedroom, but other nights I'd fall asleep with Emrila in her room. And yet other nights we'd all fall asleep in the master bedroom. Nothing sexy. Not yet, at least. We'd just all be watching this fantasy show the ladies liked and fall asleep. But I did kinda hope I could get with both of them at once sometime soon. I was only human, after all. I looked over the pile of gold and jewels I had in the safe, and it was quite a badass feeling. All that glittering metal meant security for me and my growing family. Ipsith had already brought up kids once or twice, and despite only being 21, I knew I'd be able to provide for them now. That thought took me to the next item on my mental to-do list. I got in the shower and went over what I wanted to say to David Miller, my next-door neighbor. There was a rumor that he was thinking about moving, but I wasn't sure what his reason was and wondered if it might be because of the young polyamorous guy next door with his two cosplayer girlfriends. As I soaped up in the warm jet of water, I tried to think of the best way to approach the subject, but by the time I had rinsed off, dried and dressed in a nice t-shirt and blue jeans, I figured being straightforward was the best. When I came out into the rest of the double-wide trailer, I found Ibsith finishing up the lunch dishes, and Amrila was sitting on the rust-orange couch and checking her swords for nicks and scratches. "You ladies get your shoes on," I said, as I sat to pull on my work boots. "I'm gonna go talk to David, and hopefully we'll have something to celebrate when I get back."
"Good luck, my king,"
Ibsith called from the kitchen.
"Give him hell, partner,"
Amrila said from the couch. As I went down the porch and walked along the sidewalk to the house on the left of mine, I went over my offer in my head. I'd looked up prices for similar houses in the area, but my offer was a little lower than some of the places I'd seen online. My lawyer had already told me we could avoid all kinds of costs if we didn't go through a realtor, though, and I hoped avoiding the hassle and expense would be worth it for Miller. As I came up the driveway, I looked at Miller's house. It was a nice, two-story place that looked like it had been built sometime between the 1940s or 1950s. There were three kids' bikes in the yard, which was well kept, and the unfortunate yellow color of the siding was something I could easily change. There was a two-car garage, and I guessed there were at least three bedrooms from the size of the place. If not, all houses in Ohio had a basement, and even if it wasn't finished, my background in work and construction meant I could easily put in another bedroom down there. I saw David's sedan was parked in the driveway, so I knocked on the door and waited for a moment. Then the door opened to reveal Caleb, the Miller's 12-year-old son, who looked very bored and had a small game console in his hand.
"Hey, Mr. Hell,"
the preteen said in a tone that was somehow both polite and unimpressed.
"Hey, Caleb," I replied. "Is your dad home?" "Dad!"
Caleb shouted over his shoulder, and then he walked away without another word and left the front door hanging open. I stood there awkwardly for a moment, with a full view of the living room. There were a few toys scattered around, but it was neat and orderly otherwise. But it was the hardwood floor my eyes were drawn to. I was already thinking about how it would just take a little sanding and a new coat of stain and urethane to restore the wood's luster.
"Caleb!"
I heard David shout as he approached the door.
"You're letting all the cool air out. Oh, hey, Eddie."
"Hey, David," I replied with a smile as I held out my hand for a shake. "I was wondering if you had a minute."
"Sure."
David smiled back, but I could see the confusion on his face. Miller and I had never talked much beyond, "Hi, how are you?" or waving briefly as we caught one another's eyes while out mowing the grass.
"Come on in,"
the middle-aged man said in a friendly tone.
"You'll have to excuse the mess."
"Oh, I'm not bothered," I assured as I followed Miller inside. "Just looks like you've got kids to me." And that was true. The place was nice on the inside, and outside of a few toys and a little clutter here and there, it was pretty clean. Still, I tried not to look around too much, even though I was quietly taking stock of the place. David sat down in a nice, fairly modern-styled lazy boy chair and gestured for me to take a seat on a large, well-loved sectional.
"What can I help you with today?"
David asked. "I heard a rumor you were thinking about moving." I got straight to the point. "And if that's true, I'd like to make an offer for your house, if that's not too presumptuous of me."
"You're very direct."
Miller raised his eyebrows, but his friendly chuckle assured me he wasn't upset.
"The missus and I had been talking about it. I guess nothing stays secret in this cul-de-sac for long."
"No," I sighed. "It does not."
"Oh,"
David said, and his face fell a little.
"I don't want you to think we might be leaving because, well, because of your situation. I just got a promotion, and commuting an hour to and from Cleveland every day sounds like the worst."
"I didn't assume anything," I replied as I spread my hands in an amiable gesture. "And that makes sense. If you are serious, though, about moving, that is, then I'd like to offer you $200,000. But I'm willing to cover any closing costs and pay for any inspections and repairs needed. David sat in a stunned silence as he stared at me for a moment. I knew the first rule of negotiations was to let the other person make the first offer, but I wasn't trying to scam Miller. I was offering a fair price based on the current market. Wringing every penny I could out of my neighbor wasn't the goal here. Rather, I wanted to offer a square deal and go from there. But I did start a bit lower than I was willing to go. That's assuming this place has 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, and a partially finished basement, I clarified.
Yeah.
David cleared his throat as he adjusted his position in his dad chair.
It's 3 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, and there's a shed in the back that I have set up nicely, but the basement's unfinished.
A shed? I asked. How nice are we talking about here?
Allow me to show you,
David replied with a grin. Within a few minutes, we were sitting in David's shed, which was more an exterior man cave. There was electricity hooked up, a little AC unit in one of the 3 windows, and enough room for a workbench, some well-planned storage, a mini-fridge, and 2 comfortable chairs. David reached into the fridge and grabbed 2 beers, one of which he offered to me as I looked at what he had done on the workbench. It looked like David was just as nerdy as his lovely plump wife, who had once confessed her love of LARPing to me. There, on David's workspace, was a small army of little figurines, a literal army of them, that Miller was painting. There were tiny soldiers, tanks, even a few tiny cannons. They looked like American World War II troops, with a couple of British units mixed in. These are nice, I complimented my neighbor. This whole place is pretty nice.
Thanks.
David smiled modestly as he sipped his beer. I looked around at the finished walls, painted a neutral white color, and the baseboard heaters. This felt like it made up for an unfinished basement. So, I started as I turned back to my neighbor, what do you think of my offer?
I mean, David said with a thoughtful expression, it's not far off what Jesse and I thought about, and paying for closing costs and all that is pretty generous. I'll have to talk it over with Jesse, though. I'm sure you understand.
Of course, I said as I thought of my own 2 wives. She's got a say in this, too, and I know I kinda sprung it on you. I just wanted to get in there before it went on the market, and you had a realtor to consider. Maybe save us both some money.
I'll definitely think about it,
David said with total sincerity, but then he lowered his voice into a conspiratorial tone.
Between you and me, it would be nice to not live next to Brock.
Oh, I snorted. I can imagine. Miller and I finished our beers while joking and lightly bashing Brock Stanton, the type A asshole who lived on the other side of David. Once I was done with my beer, I excused myself since I had more to do that day, but I felt pretty good about how everything went, all in all. But the afternoon was wearing on, and I had to see a man about a car.